Welcome to Burr News Current Affairs Podcast with Jeremy Deacon. Listen at your leisure on www.burrnews.com.
Good morning and welcome to this, the latest live Burr News interview. I'm joined today by Michael Charles, the General Secretary of the Bermuda Union of Teachers, and Shannon James, the President of the Union. Thank you, gentlemen, for sparing some time today to talk to me. It's appreciated.
Good morning.
Good morning. First question is, and it's had a lot of publicity, a lot of people have been talking about it, is this apparent ministerial revolving door? More than a dozen or so education ministers in just a little over a dozen years. What kind of effect do you think that has had? Has it had an effect on teaching in Bermuda?
Well, I don't know if it has an effect on teaching, because teachers will teach. They are trained to teach.
I think the direction.
I think what it really has an effect on is the direction, the policies of the ministry, because, and I've been here for a little while. I've been here for some of the ministers, and they come in with certain ideas, certain policies, and some of them are really good ones. And before they have a time to enact them, they're gone. I mean, I know some time past there were ministers who came in and had a strong bent on technology and technology in the schools, which we sorely need. But before they have a chance to have those policies enacted, they move on, and then somebody else comes on with another new theme. So that's in that way, I think we have been hurt, and education has been hurt.
Has that held things back at all, from your point of view, do you think?
It has. I mean, there's no doubt about it. This constant changing, this constant, you know, flip-flopping, if you will, of ideas and curriculum. I mean, we have had a curriculum now for a few years, and it's beginning to show some progress. You can see from the numbers that the curriculum is working, but it's only working for a certain amount of our students. Everybody is not academically inclined, and therefore this curriculum is working for one section of the people. But the constant changing has its effect on the students. It has its effects on the teachers, because, you know, it's like the flavor of the month, you know, and after a while people say, well, this too shall pass. And they really, you don't get a chance to be able to get any data on what was tried, because it's not tried for long enough. Education is not something that you see results in right away. It has to have an effect on, you know, more than one level of students.
Absolutely.
Also, on top of that, some ministers do have ideas, and some ministers, you don't hear from them, you don't see them doing anything, they're just kind of there. And I look at some ministries, tourism, transportation, where you can see the minister playing an active part, like a real integral part in the delivery of that ministry, but education, you don't quite get that. And you wonder if it's that ministry that everyone talks about, but no one really wants.
It's a strange thing to say. It kind of brings on to the next question, though, that we have Cole Simons now. He's a minister. he's already talked about things like parental involvement committees and things like that. From what you've heard so far, is he heading in the right direction?
The parental involvement is just a piece of the bigger picture. There are so many things. The budget keeps getting cut, and so you have to do more with less.
Well, the budget wasn't cut, was it? But we'll come on.
But remember, it was cut compared to where it was.
Okay.
And we got $2 million more, but it's still a reduced budget compared to what it should be. And so there are a lot of issues. We had an issue at Tatum. And the school report also showed that our schools are old. And the health of our school buildings is not. We have 6 schools, and we have to address things like that also.
It's something I want to come on to later on. But in terms of the new minister, have you met him yet?
No. this is sort of strange in that most ministers usually within a couple of weeks of being appointed would usually contact us. Mm-hmm. In this case, we have not heard from this minister.
He called me one evening. We had a chat. But apart from that, haven't heard anything. And the junior minister, never.
Well, I don't know. I don't know why there is a junior minister, because you never hear from that minister.
Have you? You guys have asked for a meeting, I take it, have you?
We have not asked for a meeting. Normally, the minister reaches out to us and says, you know, can we have a meeting? Can we sit down and chat? And that has been, I think, as long as I've been here, ministers, as soon as they're appointed, will reach out. We are one of the major stakeholders in education, and usually the minister will reach out to us and say, you know, can we have a meeting? Can we sit down and have a chat? Just to see where we are, or at least to introduce himself or herself. We have not had that privilege yet.
Just go back to my original question, though. From what you've heard so far, are things moving in the right direction from your point of view?
With the parental piece?
No, and with the ministry as a whole under the new minister.
Maybe too early to speak. We haven't heard much other than the parental piece. I know the board is driving the strategic plan, but as far as where we're headed right now, from as far as the minister stands, we haven't heard much.
Right.
So we can't really say.
Fair enough. Just moving on from then, there was some delay over appointing an education commissioner.
Could you say that again?
Sorry, there was a delay over appointing the commissioner.
Mm-hmm.
Again, going back to the revolving ministerial door, how much of an effect has that had on education?
Well, the fact that you did not have a commissioner plays really negatively on education, because the acting commissioner could not, you know, make any decisions per se.
Because of the nature of acting.
Because of the nature. He had to always be looking over his shoulder at the permanent secretary before he made any decisions. Or he had to discuss it with her. Hopefully now that he is appointed, he can run the department, because that's what the commissioner does, run the department. For the last 3 years, you know, really nothing is done, because he was just in a holding pattern.
Mm.
And it does affect the ministry when the person who is in charge is not really in charge. Mm. You know, and now that he's been made permanent, he's beginning to make some changes. He's looking at the new school year, because this year is finished. Mm-hmm. So he's looking at the new school year to enact some changes policy-wise, staffing-wise. And, you know, hopefully with a vision to moving. And as Shannon mentioned the strategic plan, they are pressing ahead with it, hoping to be able to bring it into play by September. It's a bit of a rush, but it is needed. It is sorely needed in order for us to move forward.
Of course, but then you might have a new minister.
Well, that is also possible.
You mentioned some of the changes. Can you tell us what those kind of changes are that he's considering?
Well, you don't want to speak out of turn, but
no, indeed, that's one of, if you could.
Right. One of the things I know is that probably some of the administration in schools might change. That's one of the things we are looking. I think they're looking at some of the looking at how they manage students who have problems in schools. That's one of the things that sorely needs being looked at, because we have severe behavioral problems in our public schools. Severe, very severe. And that is something that has to be addressed. Otherwise, you're going to have a young population that is, you know, out of whack. We do have, you would not believe the kind of... And it comes from the community.
Mm.
You know, when you have a dysfunctional community, you're going to have dysfunctional students in schools. And that is what we are witnessing right now. And it takes every ounce of energy and every ounce of expertise that we have in the area here to deal with that kind of behavior.
That kind of behavior, has that grown recently, or is that? And how does it manifest itself, Mr. James?
Well, Bermuda society is going through a lot right now. So, of course, what happens at home, the children internalize it, and it comes out in school. It can come out with a child that's unruly, or it could be a child that's very quiet, and everything in between. And so those are the types of things that we have to deal with. And I know they are focusing on, especially for girls coming up, something to help our girls who need that type of attention.
Just going back to the commissioner, in the past, Mr. Charles, you said the past commissioners had been undermined by micromanagement. Mm-hmm. Has that stopped?
Well, the commissioner has only been...
Presumably, when you say micromanagement, that presumably comes from the minister, does it?
No, not really. Not really the minister, because most ministers really... excuse me. To put it mildly, most ministers don't have a clue about education. And it's true. I mean, they look at policy, but the permanent secretaries are the ones that are... And that is where the micromanagement has come from in the last 3 years of the acting commissioner.
Is that because it was an acting position there, do you think, Amen?
Maybe we could put it down to that, but I think that even if someone is acting, you have to allow them to, you know, be able to, you know, run the department. They shouldn't have to be looking over their shoulders every time they want to, you know, do something. You hold them accountable, yes.
Of course.
But you have to allow, in order to hold them accountable, you have to allow them to act. If they have to be looking at you every time they want to do something, then, you know, the accountability is actually yours. So in that sense, you know, we have really not moved ahead in any sense of the way.
So with the new commissioner, do you expect that there won't be that level of micromanagement?
That is our hope. That is our hope.
Because other signs good so
yeah,
far.
Yeah, that's so far, you know, things seem to be, you know, it takes a while to move this train. I mean, you know, it has to move slowly out of the station. But I think he has ideas. I mean, he's experienced. He's done schools in Texas. He's been a principal here at Whitney. So he has, you know, administrative experience. And we hope that he can use this with some vision for the future. And as I said, with this strategic plan that is underway right now, I think will give us a really good platform to move forward.
There was a report recently stating that I think one of the things the parents and teachers most wanted to see was an increase in technology, use of technology in schools. That's been mentioned before. Now, I know when we were trying to set up this interview, you mentioned that you couldn't do it at your school because the Wi-Fi doesn't work.
Right.
That's...
Well, we can't access it.
Why not?
And the students will say, Mr. James, what's the password? I don't know. Come on, Mr. No, I really don't know. Why? I don't know. I can't give an answer for that. But technology is a piece, and not just to have it, but to be able to use it. Not just the teacher using it, but the students using it.
Can you explain what you mean by technology? I mean, some people might take that to be just a laptop or a desktop or an iPad or whatever. What the kind of technology?
It can range from something as simple as a laptop or an iPad, or even something as deep as teaching them coding, French, Spanish coding. You know, why not? Because that's the new language. That's the world nowadays. And so, you know, we have... in our classes, these things called smart boards, mm-hmm. where you can go and you can manipulate what's on the board, like a giant iPad for people that don't know. That was great, but now they need to be repaired, people need to be trained in it. So just things like that, as far as technology is concerned, we're a bit behind.
When you say you're a bit behind, can you just... expand a little bit, because technology is the future, isn't it? I mean, the rate of change in the last 10 years has been phenomenal, and if you're not up to speed in it, you're going to get left behind.
I remember years ago when Milton Scott was the Minister of Education, way back then, the push was to get computers in every class, and we got computers in every class. We actually had more computers then, however long ago that was, than we do now in 2017. With the budgets being cut and with the staff being cut, we don't have even that IT support like we used to. And so computers break down, they're not replaced, just the basics like that, not to mention coding and everything else you could do with.
And is this across all age groups?
What was that?
Is it across all age groups? Across the entire education
For the most part, yeah.
And what impact do you think that's having on students?
It's their language. You know, they could show you stuff on their phone that we can't.
My daughter does, yeah. I regularly turn to her for help. Yeah. She's 14 right. years old, yeah. My 11-year-old yeah. son. Yeah.
Even this interview 3 years ago couldn't be possible. But through technology, it's simple. You set up a phone and a camera and you're going. And it's where we are now. Textbooks are great, but I have a textbook in my class that says one day we may be using solar power. If I need to find something, if you need to find something, you just Google it. And you look for a few sources so that you know it's legit. Exactly. But technology helps.
So is this holding children back?
We do what we can. But the world is a world of technology now. Mm. So it's holding them back a bit, yeah.
Just a kind of question that somebody, a colleague of mine, suggested I ask. I have to give credit to him because it's not my question. Would the BUT consider itself friendly with, indifferent to, independent from, or opposed to the Ministry of Education?
Well, one thing about... And this is what people tend not to understand about, especially where we stand. When it comes to our stance on things, we affirm what's right and we oppose what's wrong. And we use that as our guiding mark. So it's not like we're friendly or we're not friendly or we like or we don't like. That's the principles that we follow. And we use that, we apply that to everything. I mean, we try to be friendly because... honey attracts more than vinegar, but that's the thing. We affirm what's right, and we have to stand up against what's not right.
Our motto is education for responsibility. And we recognize, and around this table, we have our meetings, our executive, as a matter of fact, we have one today. And what we try to, and what we insist on from time to time, is that we are here for the children. Mm. You know, we are not here for ourselves. We are not here for the ministry. We are here for the students. And anything that will do or will improve the lot of Bermuda students, we will do our best. And we will combine with anybody. We will work with anyone to achieve that aim. And I think this is what we try to, this is the question we ask ourselves all the time. You know, is it best for our children? And I think both sides. I mean, we, as Shannon says, we work with anyone. If the ministry is, you know, we work with them with professional development. We work with them with our teachers. We work with anyone who will help out our students, and that is our aim. You know, as we go forward.
Because you've got a moderate union, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, we'd like to think that. We don't, you know, pride ourselves on being, you know, ultra left or right or whatever. We'd like to think that we represent our members well. We also will tell them when we think they're wrong. Mm. You know, so.
And even we feel that when you operate by those principles, it transcends government. So it's not like we like PLP or we like OBA or we dislike either one. It's when you operate by those principles, that's what we have to use to, as we sail through this type of world, because our members are diverse. So we can't think that we speak on behalf of everyone for certain issues that aren't child-related?
Just, there are some examples leading on from that question where you have been very critical of government. The review of school reorganisation, I think. You were quoted as saying, Mr. Charles, after taking the country through all this anxiety, to come up with something as lame as that is really disappointing. In terms of the number of reports, you criticised the plethora of reports as being so many, and you criticised the throne speech as being, quote, I think, a bunch of platitudes. Mm-hmm. What's your plan?
Well, one thing, we believe in professional development. We have the biggest set of professional development workshops, we believe, on the island. Every October, we use this opportunity to sharpen the tools of our teachers. Our committee met just yesterday to make sure that that is delivered again beyond, like, just to the best of their ability. So one thing is we believe that if our teachers are well-equipped, they can go into the class and really empower our young people. So that's one aspect of it.
Are the teachers well-equipped?
Excuse me. Some of them are, not everyone, and that's why we do continuing professional development. We would like to think that, and I think anyone who was taught or anyone who in the profession knows that in order to teach properly, you have to be highly intelligent. It doesn't, you because, and I don't think people really see teachers in the light that they should. When a teacher is standing in front of a classroom with, let's say, 18 students who learn at different speeds, who learn differently, tactile or whatever it is, I mean, and you have to deliver something to all of these students in 50 minutes. It takes a highly intelligent, a highly efficient person to do that. And I don't think that teachers get the credit that they should. I'm not saying that all our teachers are brilliant. In no profession do you get everybody to be at that standard. But we try to keep our teachers on the cutting edge. One of the things we have, and we do have an evaluation tool with the ministry, might be a little antiquated now. It should be brought up to should be improved on. But it is a tool that is a supportive tool. It is not one of those I got you type of things. And we expect it to be used in that way, so that if a teacher has a failure or not good enough in that area, they could be supported in that area to make them better. And we encourage teachers to come if we can help them, because we have an executive of about 19 people. And if anyone who, and we encourage our teachers, if they're having a problem, to come and see us so that we can help.
What other things would you like to see? I mean, at the beginning of this, we mentioned some ministers that came with some good ideas. What if you could formulate a plan for the improvement of education? What kind of ingredients would it have?
It would have support systems for our children, the proper physical therapy, speech therapy, all those counseling-type aspects. It would have that integrated arts where they have not just quick exposure, but drama, music, drawing, and those types of arts. It would have a well-balanced and well-funded, well, not just well-funded, but a well-supported system as far as science, as far as everything is concerned.
So you're saying those things don't happen now, or just not supported enough?
In some cases, but we need to just not have some cases. It needs to be for everyone.
Is there anything else?
One of the things that we need to have, and we don't have really, is the technical aspect of our schools. The ministry has what they call now career pathways, but that only starts at high school level. We need to have children exposed to the technical parts of it, even late at primary school, definitely at middle school level, so that, you know, all of our students are not going to go to university.
Mm.
They are not, everybody, it's not a one-size-fits-all type of education. We need to have a comprehensive type of education so that, as Shannon says, those who are into the fine arts, those who are into, you know, drama and theater, and those that are into the trades.
Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of talk about, you know, bringing back the technical
institute, so that when they finish school, if they're not going on to university, they can find some work here to do, because this is one of the problems with our young people who drop out of school because they don't see school preparing them for life after. You know, because I'm not going to go to university. What you teach, why is math necessary? But if they're in the trades, they will see why math is necessary. They will see why science is necessary, why chemistry is necessary if you're going to be a plumber.
There is a educational theorist named Howard Gardner who has a theory of multiple intelligences. And what he says is, instead of just focusing on the math, the science, the language, and say that these people are smart, everyone has some sort of intelligence. So someone built this table, and how they carved it, and how they, I don't know how they did it, that's an intelligence. Mm. And when we celebrate everyone's intelligence, but when we expose them to the different gamut of what education can offer, then we can let everyone flourish. I can remember way back when Devin Lane was around, they had a program, they had motor mechanics, they had all sorts of things. A lot of their students have businesses to this day because they were equipped. And these were the students that society kind of said won't make it. But they were equipped through school. And those day release programs and those tools that they picked up then are still helping them today. And they are productive members of society. One more thing,
yeah, please,
even
please.
Preschool. Preschool right now is optional. And what everyone's finding is when the children get to P1, the skill levels are all over the place. And we've had a few ministers who have flirted with the idea of making preschools mandatory, but even that should be mandatory.
Why?
It's the foundation. Those foundational years are key.
Because, of course, in other countries, education actually starts a lot later.
Later, yes.
Well, I think, is it Sweden doesn't start until 7 years old?
Finland starts at 7. But their whole system is different in Finland in that, going back to the teaching again, in order to get into teaching in Finland, they take the top 10%. And in schools, teachers are given a lot of autonomy to do what they see best for the students. So their whole system is slightly different than ours. But we feel, and I share Shannon's sentiment, that in Bermuda, the system that we have, if preschool is not mandatory, the P1 teacher has a very, very hard time. Because, and we know that, I mean, there are kids, you have such a large sector of kids coming in. I mean, some kids can come in, they know two timetables, some could spell their name, and some of them, if they see their names written across there, they wouldn't know it. So that is the specter that you are dealing with there. And, you know, you have a year to sort that out as a P1 teacher. If it's not sorted out, they go to year two and they're already frustrated. Because
so could that work, preschool? Are there enough buildings? Are there enough resources to actually support that?
We can do it. It can be done.
Yeah. But would you need additional resources? I mean, you mentioned having the budget cut. I mean, it was increased in the last budget, but
yeah, the budget is. Just to talk about the budget a little bit, okay? The government speaks about the budget. Okay, they say we are the third, education is the third highest budget. But of that budget, close to, what, how much in company?
Like 90%.
90% of it is salaries.
Right. For the ministry.
Right, for the ministry. So how much does it go, how much goes to education? So when you claim, and when the premier talks about, you know, oh, it's such a big budget, that does not go to education. I mean, okay, it goes, but it goes for salaries. Teachers have to get paid.
It doesn't go to computers.
It doesn't, right, it doesn't go to buying anything else. I mean, right now, teachers are having to buy their own supplies. They're asking parents to bring in stuff. You know, and you know, that's not how education is supposed to be funded.
It reminds me, actually, I think you were quoted as saying that one person, one teacher, was resorted to paying for Wi-Fi.
Yeah, some, yeah. If you want it,
he pays for his own Wi-Fi, and we live in a Wi-Fi society, but we can't access it like that. One thing we and this is what we've stressed also: money is great. Don't get us wrong; the budget helps, but it's the management of our resources. And I take what's happening for the America's Cup. Have they been managing education like how the America's Cup has been managed? Money is great, but it's the management of what you have that is even better. Because you could throw money at things, but if you don't manage it properly to make it work for you, to really get your bang for your buck, it's pointless.
I was going to ask about the ACA. It's here, it's on everybody's minds. I know you've been slightly critical, haven't you, of the money spent on the America's Cup or the apparent amount of money. Has government got its priorities right?
Well, and the reason why I am critical is simply because, I think as Shannon just mentioned, is because of the other things that should be important. As I pointed out in a letter to the Premier, America's Cup is an event. You know, when that is, it's like cup match. When it's finished, it's finished.
And we get the idea of stimulating the economy.
Yeah, well, that's the big thing.
Yeah.
In theory, hopefully at least, it will stimulate the economy.
And
it will
get
more tourists. It will generate more money. Yeah.
But you can't neglect everything else and just, you know, you can multitask. Please multitask. And so we have the management of education. Okay, so you cut the budget. But let's see. Let's put this team together to make sure that we can manage what we have efficiently.
You know, and cutting the budget is one thing. But depending on your priorities, you cut the budget. So you don't cut everything by 5% or just for the 5%. If you think education is important, then you cut it by less. Then you cut another ministry or something. You just don't cut everything across the board, if depending on your priorities, because right now we didn't have any money, but we found money to fill in what 9 acres of stuff out in Wedco. We found money to do a number of things that you wanted to do, while there was a report stating that, you know, 18 of your schools are in deplorable condition. So, you know, this is why, you know, we say that the priorities are a little skewed. I mean, this government came in saying that education was in crisis. This was 2012. Education was in crisis. The question is, what have you done to that to help or to solve that crisis? And we don't see any.
See, a lot of people will be confused because it's been well catalogued, well reported, that I think it costs something like $3,000 more to educate a pupil in the public system than it does in the private system. So a lot of people are going to think, well, you've got extra $3,000 per pupil, you've got the resources.
Well, here's what people don't understand. We have, because of the plethora of everything that we have, we need the staff to support. So the learning support piece, the behavioral piece, the counselor piece, all those things. So we do have children that come from private schools who the private school didn't have those types of resources. So yes, it costs more in the public school because we have more services for students. So it's going to cost more.
The thing is, we don't know how much it costs in private schools. I mean, I don't know. You hear figures. You hear 22,000. You hear 25,000. Excuse me. We don't know exactly what it costs there. And on top of that, they get monies from everywhere else. You know, they get monies from, you know, private donations and whatever else. Plus, at those schools, you got raffles. I know my son went there. You know, you had your 20 raffles that you had to sell. And you had the fairs that you had to go to. So it's not just the money that you pay out of your pocket, which rises 5% every year. You know, people don't talk about that. But at the public school, we have to accept every kid that walks through that door. The private schools don't. And that is a big factor. If you walk in there with an autistic kid, they will tell you, we can't take it.
There was a lot of controversy some time ago now about the potential closure of schools. You were in favour of closing some schools, though, weren't you? You weren't against it, I should say.
Like we said, if we affirm what makes sense and we jump on what doesn't make sense.
Because that's an extremely emotive issue. You don't want your child's school to close.
that is the problem. However, if you wanted to close a school, but you could provide the parents with an alternative that is so attractive. Mm-hmm. I am going to take you to this place that has all the Wi-Fi, that has all the technical stuff, that has everything. I think you will have less of a problem. But what the minister came in with was saying, we're just going to shut this place down. And you don't know where your kids are going. You know, you don't know where your kids are. We're just going to shut this place down. When he got the score report, he realized that it wasn't as easy. You don't hear that anymore. He realized that it was not as easy to close any one school, because closing one school could overload another building, mm-hmm. which couldn't take those numbers anyway. So it's not just as clear-cut as just closing one school.
And we are PR experts, but it's how it's all in the delivery. You can make parents, because, you know, my child, I went here, my grandmother went there, and my child has to go there. But if you can say, well, how about this? You know, this school is falling apart, but in this school we can have X, Y, and Z. There are other ways to make it more palatable.
So do you think it should come back onto the agenda?
Not just to do it.
But in the principle that you've explained, should it come back onto the agenda?
If the government can provide an alternative, an attractive alternative, building, you know, whatever other sources that you can supply there that is better, that is more attractive, I don't think you will have as much problems as you think.
Would you consider giving the government some guidance in that, giving them your own plan?
We don't mind sitting down to talk with them. Sure, I mean we had lots of discussions with the former minister, but of course these guys, well, they think they know more than anybody else, so they go on their merry way. But we had numerous discussions right here in this room.
Because it'd be useful for you, wouldn't it, to present your own strategy in that?
We have strategies, and we'd love to talk to them. Hopefully, with the new strategic plan now. We are part of it. We had a brainstorming session just last week here. I mean, and it is good to see that the public is engaged. I mean, evidently everyone is engaged in this strategic plan, and we hope and we pray that, you know, really what will come out of this will be something that will help the students, because that's what it's about. We just hope that this plan, because right now they're listening to everybody, which is good. I mean, last week, the lady who's leading it, Miss Lisa Clark-Smith, she was telling us about her experience listening to students up at Cedar Bridge and Berkeley, and they gave them an earful, which is something that you should be doing all along. I mean, these are your clients, and if you don't listen to them, you're pushing things at them that, you know, that you don't even know if they want.
The issue with this plan, as you mentioned before, you've had ministers coming in and out, different ideas, not been in touch, some have been in touch. If the PLP wins, would you expect them to carry on with this plan?
Well, the great thing about this...
But you asked them to.
Yeah, well, this plan is being pushed by the education, the board.
The board.
So it's not a political thing, we hope.
But the good thing is that it's a plan that isn't written over there and delivered over here. It's a plan that everyone is going to have input on.
Right.
So the hope is, and this is what happened in Rhode Island, when the new governor came in and said, this is what we're going to do, because everyone was now vested in this plan. It was like, no, this is what we came together and this is what we said we wanted. And so the community was able to push back and keep their strategic plan good. So that's what we're hoping with this one also.
If you had a magic wand and if you could wave it and make one wish to make education better, what would be the wish? I'll give you one each. Silence.
Can we wish for 8 more wishes?
No, you can't. No. That's your wish. What's the standout things to... I mean, we talked about technology, we talked about micromanagement, we talked about ministerial interference, or not just interference, but hands-on, hands-off.
I would say this. I would my wish, and this is my goal as a teacher, is to create a critical thinker. Because I feel that if we create those critical thinkers...
Students being critical.
They are then equipped to force their own path. So that's my goal, create a critical thinker. In creating that critical thinker, we need to give them that environment that fosters that type of those types of thought processes. But that, in a nutshell, is my goal as a teacher for my student, is to be a critical thinker. And that's even because of all the hype about private schools. It's this, our students have this burden of, because we hear it and it's in the community and everyone says it, even if it's not verbally, it's subtle. It's, oh, you go to this school? You know, oh, you go to that school. And our students feel it.
So there's a lack of esteem? Self-esteem?
Because I feel, and we talk about Finland a lot, but one of the things, and we always look at pieces of Finland, but Finland as a whole, everyone is pushing for education. And I don't feel that as a whole, we as an island push for education for everybody. So as far as encouraging, you know, everyone, hey, do your best in school. I don't find we have that type of culture here. And so I've had students who, you know, their parents, I just don't like that stigma. And the stigma is you're over here, you're better, you're over here, you're worse. And if we have those critical thinkers, then they could knock those types of things to the side. And I'll give you another example. There is a dual enrollment program where students can actually get a college degree before they get their high school diploma. And I was talking to one of the Bermuda College professors, and she gets mad when you say that Bermuda College isn't up to scratch. We're accredited and we go through this process. But people will downplay, they do dual enrollment, but it's Bermuda College. You know what I mean? And we don't promote our own, and because we don't promote our own, that filters down to our students, and our children feel, oh, I'm at Bermuda College. And no, yeah, Bermuda College. They have the same, I mean, I know they don't fall under our remit, but they have the same textbooks, they have the same standard of excellence that any school is, and that's why they're accredited. But those types of thoughts filter down to our students. And it gives them these mental chains that are hard to break.
Mr. Charles, you've had an added advantage to time to think about your one wish.
You know, at our strategic planning session last week, you know, when we asked, you know, what would we like to see? And I said, one of the things I'd like to see, if I had my magic wand, as you say, is that we have just schools. No private schools. Just everybody go to school. Because then the entire community would be invested in the schools. Because right now, the people who can afford it, they are invested somewhere else. And I remember years ago, former principal at SANS, Mel Bassett, he said that if we keep on going down this road, we are going to have two sets of schools. And that's what we have. That's what we're aiming for. Not aiming for, we're almost there. We've got two sets of schools. We got those schools and we got these schools. And if there was some way to just do away with private, public, and just have schools, we would be a much better country. As a matter of fact, one of the things that would be nice if we had government-mandated preschools, everybody should go there. There should be no private or public. It should be schools for everybody. Because then the public will be vested. You know, right now we're having exams, GCSE, important exams. You don't hear anything in the community like, you know, exams are coming up. In the Caribbean, if you were in the Caribbean now on television, you will see it. Hey, they call it CXE. CXE exams are coming up. Are you doing this? Are you preparing? There's nothing here.
Why don't we have that though?
Don't we have it? Because I don't think, for some reason...
What you're saying is, it doesn't seem as a country that they're invested in education.
Yeah. We don't seem to really push that sort of thing. You know, if it happens, it happens. I mean, and our kids are doing very well. Our kids are doing very... What is it? 80 or 90% of our public school students go to universities in the States, in England. And, you know, top-notch universities. But we don't hear anything about it. They go. They get accepted. So evidently, what we are doing here must be somewhat good.
And the thing is that at the end of the day, it's Bermuda that we love Bermuda. And so if we just concentrate on this half and not this half, you know, what happens to this half? So if we say we love Bermuda and Team Bermuda and all those types of things, we have to look out for everybody and ensure that everyone has not just access to school, but fair access and resourced access.
On that note, gentlemen, thank you very much indeed for your time.
You can just say something before this is Teacher Appreciation Week. And we just like to thank you for the timing of this. It just so happens, maybe it was by design. But we like to thank our teachers, not just public, not just, you know, primary, but every teacher for doing what they do day in and day out, for giving their all. It's not just about the math or the science. It's about the child. And so we teachers, we appreciate you. Thank you so much for what you do. And, you know, you are making a difference. So thank you for that. And also, if we can take this time to mention, we're in our 98th year, so look out for some big things happening with our union as we turn 100 coming up. And we also have the CUT Games. We're part of the Caribbean Union of Teachers. And so every other year, there is the CUT Games, which is like a mini CARIFTA. And these children are from the ages of 5 to 12, 14. And so that is actually here next summer.
Cool.
And so expect, and this is where your Usain Bolts and your Olders came from.
Yeah.
So you'll hear more about that approach that.
Definitely look forward to that. I have to say, as a parent of... two kids in school, I do appreciate teachers as well. Very much. Thank you very much for your time, gentlemen. That's really
good. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for tuning in to BurNews Current Affairs Podcast with Jeremy Deacon. Listen at your leisure on www.burnews.com, your 24/7 Bermuda news source.